from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I got to tell you, if the what happened last night at the Marlowe's at Northlake is any indication of what's going to happen this weekend in Louisiana, New Orleans, Baton Rouge for Dog Nation Invasion, it is going to be one heck of a week here around Dog Nation, because the invasion precursor to that were all the folks that invaded Marlowe's at Northlake last night. We had a great time. We're up on the rooftop, then it rained. We had to move inside for the regular broadcast, and you know what? Everybody just kept a smile on their face the entire time. Huge crowd. Everybody fired up about Georgia LSU. I cannot wait for it myself. We're going to talk a lot about that on today's program. I've also got a pretty big surprise coming up a little bit later on that I'm really excited about, too. So if you're with us here, you're going to want to make sure you stick around for the full broadcast, because some really cool stuff coming up in just a little bit to help you get ready for Georgia and LSU. But before that, kind of off the top here today, obviously what Georgia is facing on Saturday is a significant challenge. I think Georgia fans are ready to see their team take on a big challenge, but there is no doubt about it whatsoever. This is a major challenge facing Georgia, so much so that I thought that the stat put together by the Bear, Chris Felica, who you may see on College Game Day on Saturdays, I thought that he had a stat that really kind of signifies just what faces Georgia this weekend when it goes into the stadium known as Death Valley. If you're watching, let me show you this on the screen here. Let's don't have any kind of misgivings or misconceptions, even though Georgia is, what, about an 8-point favorite, depending on where you look at this at the time of the week at MyBookie. Georgia's been about an 8-point favorite this week, but that doesn't mean that at LSU is an easy place to win. The Bear tweets out that since the start of the 2011 season, LSU is 6-0 at Tiger Stadium versus top 10 teams not named Alabama. 0-3, of course, against top 10 ranked Alabama teams over that same span. That's the Bear Chris Felica on Twitter. It's worth pointing out that even those Alabama victories, for the most part, have been low scoring games. 10-0 comes to mind. The kind of thing where in the fourth quarter you thought there was a chance that Alabama might lose, and ultimately they won the game. But for the most part, you know, if you're a top 10 team, you've gone into Death Valley, you've left a loser, as the Bear Chris Felica shows you right there. And in fact, what was the line that the former LSU coach Les Miles used to use, that Death Valley was the place that dreams go to die? And for a lot of top 10 teams, I guess that's proven to be true. And Kirby Smart's not under any kind of false assumptions on this. We played some of this audio for you yesterday, but it's worth a reminder here that he's going into this thing eyes wide open. He knows that the stadium, the crowd, and everything is as tough as an environment comes in college football, and you better believe that he's working to prepare his team for that all week long. Here is Kirby giving some credit to the LSU fans.
Extremely tough environment to play in, one that I both experienced as a player and a lot of times as a coach. Got an incredible environment. Their fan base is really second to none in their atmosphere they create from the time you pull in on the buses to playing in the stadium. It's an awesome opportunity for our team to play on a national stage. It's an opportunity for a lot of our guys to play in a venue that a lot of Georgia players never got a chance to play in, and some in the future won't get an opportunity to play in.
So here's what recent history shows you. Because of everything that Kirby Smart just said, a stadium that some teams don't go into a lot, raucous crowd, good team on the other side of the field, it's the kind of place that if you're not Alabama good, you're probably not winning. Top 10 teams, not quite as good as Alabama, they have mostly lost at LSU since 2011. They really all lost at LSU since 2011. You got to be Alabama good in order to win in Death Valley. But the point of starting the show that way this day is to say there is still a good chance here that despite the fact that Georgia fans have found some reasons to criticize, or despite the fact that Georgia fans haven't loved everything they've seen from their team thus far this season, there is still a chance here that Georgia is Alabama good. And there is still a chance that Georgia is in that most rarefied air of conversations of the truly elite teams here in 2018. And there's a chance that Death Valley on Saturday is the proving ground where we all find this out. Some of the advanced stats out there, the analytics, already suggest that this may be more true than not. Brian Freemo is a writer for Football Outsiders, and he does his football efficiency ratings. And I've told you all this before. I'm kind of fascinated by these metrics, although I am not smart enough to tabulate them myself, and probably not completely smart enough to explain how they are what they are. But when you see Brian Freemo from Football Outsiders, what he tweets again this week in terms of his FEI efficiency ratings here on video, I'll show this to you. Georgia's at the top of that list, number one on the list, ahead of Ohio State at two, Alabama just number three on his list. And once again, ahead of Clemson, who's at number four. And once again, I don't quite know the math that gets to Georgia number one over there, but I am smart enough to know that number one's where you want to be. And if it takes a team as good as Alabama to go into a place like LSU and walk out a winner, well, the numbers here would suggest that maybe Georgia's in that same group. And to kind of drill down a bit more on how Brian Freemo gets to where he gets, let me show you a couple other stats. And obviously, if you're listening on the radio or in the podcast, I'll read these to you. But a couple of other advanced stats that are a little easier to understand here in terms of why Georgia is the kind of team that could be favored at Death Valley and why Georgia is the kind of team that could go in here and win on Saturday. Freemo writes on Twitter, and it's at BCF Freemo, or BC Freemo on Twitter, by the way. He writes, possession success rate leaders. This means you get a score on offense, that's a success, or you get a stop on defense, that's a success. And the percentage of drives, both offensively and defensively, that end in a success. Georgia is number two, 73.9%. 9% of the time the Georgia offense scores and combination of the Georgia defense gets a stop. That's behind just Alabama right now, which is at a staggering 81.9%. But don't even worry about that because Georgia doesn't have to play Alabama until December. But it has to play LSU this Saturday with a success rate of nearly 74%. That's one of the reasons why Georgia is thought to have a really good chance to go into Death Valley and get this win on Saturday. One more quick stat here, and I'll do my part to explain this the best I can. Freemo writes on Twitter and also at Football Outsiders here that on net points per drive, which means the total number of points per drive your offense scores subtracted by the total number of points per drive your defense allows, Georgia's third in the country at that at plus 2.35 per drive, both offensively and defensively, behind just Alabama right now and UCF, which plays a powder puff schedule. So Georgia in pretty good shape, rarefied air when it comes to that. So this is one of the reasons why, and it was last night at Marlowe's. It's on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, and it's in our comment section on both Facebook and YouTube all week long, that people are ready for this test. Even though that not every Georgia fan has loved every single thing they've seen from Georgia thus far this season, and even though Kirby Smart himself has said, you know what, I'm not sure my team has played a complete game as of yet, there is still this hunger, this insatiable appetite to go out and play a real game against a real opponent where it will be a real test and a real challenge. LSU is good enough to provide that. Even though they lost last week to Florida, this is still on the road, one of the major proving grounds in college football. But the numbers I just read you, even if I'm not good enough at math to know how they exactly arrived at them, the numbers do speak for themselves. That Georgia's getting stops and getting scores with the best in college football, better even than the Clemsons, the Ohio States, teams that we think of as legitimate national championship contenders. And the kind of success that's required to go win at LSU, Georgia may have that. And on Saturday, in front of a national stage for everybody to see, they may put that on display. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us live on video, no matter how you get to us today, on radio, on video, on podcast form. A lot of ways you get to the program, live on Facebook, live on YouTube, the Twitter feed. As I said, the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Always fun to be on with the boys over at 960. I did the morning show again today with those guys. Check me out there every Wednesday. Love being on 960 The Ref, and of course in podcast form. You can find us each and every day, every single way, whether it be Apple Podcast Player, the worldfamousdognation.com, however you get to Dog Nation Daily. We're glad to have you with us and glad to have Marco's Pizza with us as well. And really appreciative of the fact that they think about folks and their wallets, and you know, people want good food, but they don't want to pay too much for it. And that's why we love Marco's Pizza, because we can get authentic Italian quality pizza. Giammarco family sauce. I'm talking about, you know, the owner of Marco's Pizza. I've actually met before. Could not be a nicer guy. The founder of Marco's Pizza was actually in our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios at one point in time. This is an authentic guy. Family grew up in Italy. He wanted to come over to America, and he wanted to make, you know, great pizza over here in this country. And obviously, what a success story it's turned out to be. And one of the things that makes Marco's Pizza so successful is that great offer. Two medium, two topping pizzas for $6.99 each. You can check that out at Marco's.com and get more on that. All right, we are busy on today's program. One of the things I want you to stick around for later on in the show today is obviously on Friday, we've got a great Dog Nation Invasion preview special that we're going to do from New Orleans. But as a preview of the preview, if you follow me on this, you get a chance to relive one of the great moments in Georgia LSU history, courtesy of our friends at the UGA Vault later on today's show. This is going to be an awesome way to kind of go back down memory lane and really get you fired up for the game on Saturday. So stick around for that. I also have Mike Griffith on the program here in a moment. There's some injury news to get to with Georgia. We'll do a lot of that with Mike Griffith here coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here on this Wednesday, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And there's big news I need to get to here. Today is going to be a big day around Dog Nation, because coming up, I guess we're going to go live on the air around 12:45 or so. Is that what we're going to say? So we'll be back today live on the Dog Nation video channels, somewhere around 12:45 p.m. Eastern time, giving you coverage of four-star safety Lewis Cine as he makes his college commitment announcement today. We'll have live coverage on that reaction as well. Now, Jeff Sintel is on his way to Louisiana already to do some early intel from the boot there, but we're going to try to catch up with Jeff as a part of that show. It's actually our version of Before the Hedges today. So if you're normally a Before the Hedges watcher Wednesdays at 3 p.m., today Before the Hedges is going to be at an earlier time. We'll do UGA Recruiting Talk live at around 12:45 p.m. or so, covering the Lewis Cine announcements. So it's a special edition of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger at an earlier time, 12:45 p.m. Eastern time, with the announcement of four-star safety Lewis Cine. Now, as a way of kind of foreshadowing what's going to happen with Cine later on, I've talked to a lot of Georgia fans, including fans last night at the Marlowe's at Northlake. And what I'm gathering from UGA fans on this is a pretty good degree of optimism about Cine. Now, I also had a lot of optimism about DJ Daniel, and that blew up in a lot of our faces as well, kind of a surprise. So I guess anything can happen in recruiting. Maybe anything still can happen with Lewis Cine. But there is, the best I can tell here, a good bit of optimism from Georgia fans about Cine. And I think a part of this, a lot of this, is based on some of the things that Cine has said in the past. Let me give you a few examples why some Georgia fans have taken it as a belief that they think when Cine makes his choice today, the choice is ultimately going to be Georgia. First of all, Cine recently told Jeff Sintel that when it comes to his college decision, at one point in time when he was visiting Georgia, he was tempted to commit to Georgia before, on the spot, while visiting UGA. Georgia fans take that as good news. Here is how Lewis Cine, the four-star safety, explained that to Jeff Sintel.
Very tempting, man. You know, I'm very close to Ryan Davis, and then I just got close to the running back,
John Emery.
Also, the wide receiver there. Also,
Makai.
Yeah. I got close to them three boys. To be honest with you, it was very tempting. I'm not going to lie to you.
What held you off?
You'll get caught in the moment. A lot of guys get caught in the moment, you know, just make that quick decision. But, you know, I'm a thinker.
So Cine's a thinker, he says. He didn't want to get caught in the moment. He didn't want to get caught up in emotion and make too quick of a decision. And later on today, when we go live on Before the Hedges, we'll talk more about some of the deliberations that Cine went through about the schools that he's choosing between here. I think you'll see that he's a very thoughtful young man, which makes you feel better about Cine if he ultimately chooses Georgia. But clearly, even though he didn't want to make a quick decision, there's a lot about Georgia that's attractive to him. There's a lot about Georgia that serves as a magnet here, potentially drawing him to the program. And he also talked to Jeff Sintel about what he thinks Georgia's biggest selling point is right now. Here's more from Cine.
Biggest selling point. I really have a great relationship with the coaching staff down there. Great relationship with Coach Tucker. Everyone, really. I would say, overall, it's just, one, I've created a great relationship with them. Two, in my opinion, I think their scheme and how I would fit in there, I'm very physical and, you know, my playing style, I think I would fit there perfectly fine, because in their defense, when I talked to them, they showed me a lot of spots where I'd be able to play and really show how versatile I was.
And it's really the film that Cine's been putting out that so many Georgia fans have Cine they would agree with as well there, that the versatility that Cine values in himself, a lot of Georgia fans have grown to value that in him as well. And while the Georgia coaches are talking to him about how he might be used, there's a lot of fantasizing out there from Georgia fans about how Cine might look like one day playing alongside a guy like Richard LeCount, who seems to be bringing a very similar style on the field right now for Georgia. And obviously Cine went on to talk a little bit more with Jeff about exactly what the plans were for Georgia and how the Dogs would use him. Here's a little more on that.
They see me playing a bit of all of it because I give them that type of flexibility. While I did camp for Coach Tucker, and you know, he was really impressed with how fluid I was with my pedals, getting out of breaks, how fast I was, the length, rangy. He really loved that. And then while watching the tape of the games and everything like that, you know, he showed me everywhere he wants me playing to, you know, make the defense flexible.
So this afternoon, around 12:45 p.m. Eastern time, Dog Nation will go live to present you coverage of Lewis Cine's commitment when it's made. We'll react to it here and give you all the coverage of that. So check us out on the Dog Nation video channels a little later on this afternoon. For now, though, of course, Around the Doghouse on Wednesdays is brought to you by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia, which provides foundation repair, basement waterproofing, crawl space encapsulation. They also offer a lifetime of support. So check them out by calling 678 ESOG now. Let me give you that number one more time. Dial 678-ESOG now. Great way to remember that number and get involved with them. And you can have one of their qualified professional technicians come out to your home and check on you, whether it be a cracked foundation, a wet basement, a damp crawl space, whatever. They're going to take good care of you because Engineered Solutions of Georgia is the only foundation repair company with a full-time engineer on staff. So call them 678-ESOG now, and they will take good care of you. All right, stick with us later on. I'm telling you, you are not going to want to miss what happens here coming up in about, I guess, about 20 minutes or so, maybe 30, 25 minutes or so, when we have a great, great, great look back on a great Georgia-LSU game from the past. But for now, though, it's our buddy Mike Griffith as we deal with a lot of Georgia injuries and everything else as the Dogs head towards LSU.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
It's great to celebrate the 800th episode of a Dog Nation Daily here today by welcoming Mike Griffith from DogNation.com. Been doing a great job covering the Georgia Bulldogs this week as Georgia heads towards one of its biggest games, biggest tests of the season at LSU. Mike, thanks for being back on our program again today. Hope you are doing well.
Absolutely, B.A.
Well, that's good to hear. Let's start with some injury news here when it comes to a couple of defensive linemen. Sounds like it's not hopeful necessarily for a David Marshall here. That's a big loss. You add Daquan Hawkins-Muckle into the mix there. Devontae Wyatt, who didn't play on Saturday. How concerned should Georgia fans be about the state of this defensive line right now, minus the three names that I just mentioned?
Well, right now I think it's okay. If Georgia were to lose another D lineman, you know, you could start getting pretty thin. But I think Georgia's got some capable guys ready to step up. We saw Jordan Davis play really well against Vanderbilt. He had that fourth down stop at the 14-yard line that really kind of proved to be the turning point in the game. You know, Georgia was only leading 7-3, and at that point, Vanderbilt had outgained them. But, you know, David Marshall's a loss. I mean, he's a guy that played 15 or 20 snaps a game. But, you know, that's why Jay Hayes is here from Notre Dame. That's why Malik Herring is here as well. So this is where Georgia's depth kicks in, and there's not as much drop-off for Georgia as there would be at many other programs.
And I agree with you on the Hayes name in particular here, and we had some people mention this at Marlowe's last night, that, you know, given what's maybe going on with David Marshall here, it does become a chance for Jay Hayes to step up. And if you look at his overall profile from Notre Dame a year ago, it was kind of that story for him there as well, where he would be quiet a few games, but, you know, he had seven tackles against Georgia, for instance, which is ironic because he plays for Georgia now. But, you know, he had those moments where he would sort of flash some, you know, brief, I guess, statistically excellent play here. So if he's got any of that in him at all against LSU on the road with no David Marshall, that becomes a pretty good time to show that for the Notre Dame transfer, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, it's an opportunity to step up, you know, and sometimes all guys need is an opportunity. You know, sometimes guys have a position because they've earned it and they're not doing anything to lose it. And, you know, there's a guy behind him that's chomping at the bit to show what he can do, and you know, when he finally gets his opportunity, he makes the most of it. And I think that's probably best-case scenario for Georgia. I don't see why it wouldn't work out that way, you know, whether we're talking about Jordan Davis at nose guard or, you know, whether we're talking about Jay Hayes or Malik Herring. I mean, these are all really talented players that would probably start at 95% of the other schools in America.
Well, I want to talk to you about Jordan Davis here for a moment, because not only do I think that Davis could play an interesting role in this game a little bit, and I'm like you, I enjoyed the flashes that I saw from him against Vanderbilt on Saturday. I think the real story here, Mike, is the way in which Davis may grow into a role by the end of the season. As you know, when Mel Tucker met with you guys before the start of the year, he admitted, right now there's no John Atkins on this team. Atkins was that nose guard for Georgia a year ago, the classic case of kind of an unsung hero. A lot of times that's the way that nose guards are going to be, because they're not going to get the biggest stats. Davis is a big guy, though, noticeably large. And for a freshman who, I think Kirby said on Saturday, probably still needs to drop a couple of pounds just to make sure his conditioning is where it needs to be, he's obviously going to spend most of September and probably part of October working his way into a role. But if he could use some extra playing time against LSU as a springboard to gain more confidence and gain whatever bit of experience is needed to be a factor here, I think it changes the entire tone for the Georgia defense. Mike, I think it becomes easier to stop the run. I think it frees up, you know, your 3-5 technique defensive linemen and your outside linebackers to do some different things. I think Georgia can defend the pass, intermediate routes differently. If you've got a guy like Davis who just eats up space and occupies blockers, I think it changes everything. And I want to get two out in front here because he's still got a lot he's got to learn here. But if the light comes on, November, Georgia's defense could look quite different than it looks right now.
Wow. It sounds like Ndamukong Suh there, B.A.
No, come on. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's not a stat situation. Ndamukong Suh is a stat guy. I'm saying the size and the presence that Davis brings can provide more stats for some of the other guys.
Well, I mean, if he can occupy two blockers, absolutely. But, you know, here's the thing. He's only a freshman. And he's only going to play a limited number of snaps. I mean, you know, Julian Rochester, Michael Barnett, you know, those guys are still going to be there. But if you add a third guy into the rotation that's capable, and you get Wyatt back, I mean, it's just going to make for a more competitive situation. Look, I don't think the Georgia staff has missed on this guy, and he's been a dominator all year and been sitting on the bench. There's a reason why he wasn't playing more earlier. I think he can be good in small doses. I don't think that he's to a stage yet, you know, where he's a guy that you can leave in there, you know, for 7 or 8 plays in a row. He certainly doesn't play, you know, when Georgia goes into the nickel situation. But in short yardage situations where Georgia has been lacking, he stepped up against Vanderbilt. It was Vanderbilt. It wasn't Florida. It wasn't LSU. It wasn't Alabama. That was Vanderbilt. And I would say that it was promising. I know the teammates are excited, but I'm not ready to call him a game changer yet. I'm not sure. I guess I'm skeptical that Georgia could have a game changer emerge this late in the season. A guy that can play a valuable role, that could be key at times, yes. But I don't think the guy's going to come in and take over the starting job.
Well, let me just clarify my point here. What I'm saying is that by November, it could be a game changer for the Georgia defense, much the same way that Ben Cleveland was last year. Because Cleveland, at this point in the season in 2017, as a redshirt freshman, was apparently not ready to play because he wasn't really on the field. But after the Auburn game in November, he became a starter. I think the Georgia offensive line improved immediately when he came in, and it's what Georgia used to beat Auburn in the SEC championship game, beat Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl. It was a better offensive line in November and December than it was in September, October, and the early stages of November, and the insertion of Ben Cleveland's a big reason why. I think that you have a couple freshmen on defense. Davis is one, potentially Channing Tindall at linebacker, another, that what they were in September is not what they're going to be in November. Not superstars by the end of this year, but guys who are capable of playing more and capable of lifting the performance of the guys around them. I think you're seeing a couple of examples of that, and I do think that Davis potentially is one of those.
Well, he certainly did against Vanderbilt. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, we're going to find out a lot about a lot of other guys and who steps up in a four-quarter game and who steps up against a really physical, talented team. I mean, Georgia hasn't played a team with this amount of talent yet. And, you know, Kirby challenged his guys. You know, he said, hey, the questions you have about our defense, they're going to be answered. You know, I saw you mentioned that earlier on your podcast earlier this week. I mean, you couldn't stop Missouri in the red zone. You could not stop Missouri loaded up at the box in the red zone from running. Now, has the defense taken the strides that it needs to take since that Missouri game and to be able to stop LSU in a game like this? That's what we're going to find out. It's all hands on deck. There's no doubt that Jordan Davis, you know, his emergence is a positive for Georgia, but I think it's going to take a lot more than him. I think it's going to take other guys stepping up. Remember, at the start of the year, Kirby said Natrez Patrick needed to be better conditioned to go for longer stretches. Monty Rice has been battling a knee injury. You know, when he's out there, I think they're a different team. I think he's a real key player in this game, probably why Kirby sent Natrez and Monty out to talk to the media this week. Jonathan Ledbetter's a guy. Need to see more plays from him. He was sent out. I think Kirby's very calculated, B.A., and who he sends out to speak to the media. And these are guys' names that you're going to need to hear Saturday in addition to young players like Jordan Davis. And yes, you need the freshmen to emerge, to provide the depth, to play roles. But ultimately, what Georgia does this year is going to be determined by those upperclassmen, those seniors like Ledbetter and like Natrez Patrick. Those are the guys that need to be stars in November.
We will get back to Georgia on the field here in just a moment. Right now, though, let's celebrate some of what UGA is doing in the classroom and in the community. You know, at the University of Georgia, we're dedicated to serving the state of Georgia and its communities and around the world. We're also dedicated to changing lives, creating solutions for some of the biggest problems, as well as focusing in on human-centered research, committed to unlocking the door to longer, healthier lives by finding solutions for deadly disease. We're also committed to securing dependable food supply by maintaining viable land and waterways. And we're committed to fostering effective leadership and enhancing community vitality and building stronger families. We're committed to improving lives for all, and we'll never stop searching for the next scientific breakthrough. Now, while making the world a healthier, more equitable place is a formidable challenge, we are hopeful and ambitious and dedicated to making a reality. Together with your help, we can continue to honor our great commitments. To learn more about UGA's initiatives and see how you can help us solve these great challenges, please visit give.uga.edu. That website, once again, give.uga.edu. All right, let me move to the other side of the ball here for a moment, Mike, and talk about the offensive line and Solomon Kinley's injury. And I have to admit, on Saturday when he went down, I was under the impression that this had the look of being something kind of serious. But based on some of what Kirby said to you guys this week, it doesn't sound like it's maybe quite as serious as it looked to my eyes when it went down. What do you make of what Kirby said this week? What do you make of the situation with Kinley? And I guess if you want to get into it, the possibility of Trey Hill, who we saw some, Jamari Salyer, who we saw some, and I guess even to a certain extent Baker, who we saw a little bit as well, and some possible guys that can step in if Kinley's not quite as healthy as Kirby Smart's intimated this week.
Yeah, that's key. I mean, Solomon Kinley, when he got carted off the field at the A, I think we both thought it might be a season ender. You know, we looked at each other in the press box. It didn't look good. You know, now you're talking about two starters on your offensive line being out. But, you know, I thought Trey Hill came in there and played well at guard. I know he had some issues at center, but when Lamont Gilliard went out to have that hand x-rayed after he got it smashed between two helmets, you know, Georgia fans can breathe a sigh of relief that Lamont's back out there, probably the best center in the SEC, real key player. And a guy, by the way, footnote on Jordan Davis, that's why Kirby's had him on the scout team working against Lamont. You work against a center like that every day, you're going to get better. That's why he's had such a sharp learning curve. But back to the Kinley injury, you know, Kirby says he was back out there practicing. You know, after watching Andrew Thomas's miraculous recovery, you know, a guy that I really didn't think would be able to go at Missouri based on the Tuesday practice, and then, boom, he was out there. Why not? If it's a sprained knee, you know, I'm guessing that'll be a game-time decision on how Solomon feels, but I think Trey Hill's capable. You know, this offensive line depth and, you know, the job that Pittman's done, it's just remarkable. I think the Georgia offensive line is a cut above the Georgia defensive line in terms of both the coaching and the development and the talent right now. And, you know, all you need to do is take a look at how Cade Mays has been plugged in there. And this Georgia offensive line still grades out as the best in the country. So I'm not as concerned about the Kinley injury, really. I think Georgia is healthy enough where I don't think injuries are going to be a factor in this game against LSU. I think it's going to come down to execution. You know, LSU lost to Florida because of turnovers. Georgia has been pretty good about taking care of the football. They dropped the ball four times against Tennessee. They were fortunate not to lose any of those turnovers, any of those fumbles. They're not going to be able to do that against LSU. I think it's going to be which team executes, and I think turnovers is what's going to decide this. I think Georgia's plenty healthy. I think they're athletic enough. I think they can match up. I think they're coached well enough. I think it's going to come down to which team executes better.
Let me stay on the offensive side of the ball for a moment here. What did you make of offensively, Georgia, I think, looking a good bit different on Saturday from a play-calling standpoint than it has really in any other game this season? I think it was only seven rushes in the first half. Part of that's attributed to the fact that Vanderbilt had the football for the majority of the time in the first half, but Georgia came out firing. Three early targets to Terry Godwin, including the 75-yard throw. What did you make of Georgia seemingly looking to get the passing attack more involved, I think, than any game we've seen, going back to the opener against Austin Peay when they threw it 45% of the time? A little different from the Georgia offense on Saturday, including at times a different pace and tempo. What did you make of all that?
I think it was. I think it's the same play calls. I think it's a concerted effort from Jake Fromm, you know, as far as where he's going with his reads and his looks. You know, I talked with Jordan Rogers, and it was a valuable conversation because Jordan visited with Jim Cheney, which, of course, we're not allowed to talk to Jim Cheney during the regular season, Jake Fromm and Kirby Smart. And Jordan told me the night before the game that Jake Fromm was going to probably make more reads to throw the football. That in the past, you know, his read, whether or not to call the run or the pass at the line of scrimmage, because he goes to the line of scrimmage with a run and a pass call. And depending on the look, Jake makes the call, right? And in the past, it's like, okay, six-man box, then we're going to run it. Seven-man box, we're going to throw it. Well, Jake's been getting a lot of this six-and-a-half-man look. You know, I mean, teams aren't stupid. They're not going to tip their hand. And Jake has erred on the side of caution. We've seen that. We've heard him say early in the season, you're not going to go broke making a profit, i.e. he's going to take the short throws that aren't there. I think against Vanderbilt, he went into that game, based on what Jordan told me was going to happen and then what I saw with my own eyes, he went into that game with the mindset that he was going to go deep. And, B.A., I think part of that equation is that Terry Godwin's back. And I think he trusts Godwin. And I'm not sure that we really saw that amount of trust was really earlier this year. You know, the Mecole Hardman passes that went for a great distance, those were mostly short passes, and Mecole did a lot after the catch. But as far as going deep downfield, I think he's got a chemistry and a trust in Godwin that he doesn't have with those other receivers. And that only makes sense because of what he did last year with Terry. You know, really kind of emerged a little bit later. So I think that was a really positive and a really big step for the Georgia offense. And I think if Jake can continue to do that, that's going to open things up underneath. Now, I don't know if this is the week to do it. LSU's got an awful good secondary. But, you know, Jake reminded everybody, hey, I can still do this. I've still got this big arm. That ball traveled 50 yards in the air, and it was right on the money. So that's something for LSU's coordinators to think about this week in preparation.
Let me squeeze in one more real quickly here. There were five, I guess, total catches for tight ends on Saturday. Four of those were delivered by Fromm, two to Nada, two to Werner. Georgia fans like that. They want to see the tight ends more involved. No matter what Kirby Smart says, it'll always be perplexing to many of them that the tight ends just haven't been more involved. What did you make of seeing that position group be a little more active on Saturday?
Yeah, all about the matchups. You know, you say you want the tight ends to catch the ball. Does that mean you want Mecole Hardman and DeAndre Swift to get it less? I mean, you know, or Terry Godwin. I mean, yeah, ultimately you want everybody to get the ball, but it comes down to volume. And when you're throwing more passes, the tight ends are going to get more involved. Or when you have a matchup that you like going in. You know, but these other teams aren't stupid. They know who Isaac Nnaji is. Everybody in the country recruited him. You know, they're going to pay attention to Isaac Nnaji. He's not one of those guys that a coordinator is going to forget about. Oh, yeah, yeah, don't cover him. Of course they're going to cover him. They're going to account for him. So Georgia's offense is based on what the defense gives you. It's not like they go in there saying, we're going to get the ball to player A, B, or C. And Kirby had that discussion yesterday when I asked him about Demetrius Robertson. I said, what does this guy got to do? And not in so many words, but what does Demetrius Robertson got to do to get the ball more? And Kirby said, well, he's in there. It's just where the read is on that particular play. It's not like they line up at the line of scrimmage and say, we're going to get the ball to this person. You know, they're going to take a look at the defense and see what player has the best matchup. And that's kind of what's happening with the tight ends. When the matchups are there, Jake Fromm has no problem throwing the football to the open guy. I promise you that. That's what he does really well. Yeah, he makes these great IDs with his pre-snap reads. That's why his percentage is through the roof when you look at his completion percentage, because Jake has a really good idea before the play of who's going to be where and who's going to be open. And he just has made more calculated risks in that Vanderbilt game going deep. So to answer your question, that's up to LSU. It's up to LSU. How do they defend the tight end? What do the matchups look like? Who do they decide to assign to Nada? And does Jake Fromm feel like that's a good matchup? That ultimately is what determines where Georgia's going with football.
All right, Mike, good stuff. We'll see you in Louisiana. We'll look forward to reading more from you at DogNation.com. Thanks for being with us today.
All right, appreciate it, B.A.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So Mike asks a question, and I think he asks it rhetorically, but I'm going to answer it anyway. He says, you know, do you want the ball to go to the tight ends at the expense of Terry Godwin sometimes, or DeAndre Swift sometimes, or another Georgia playmaker? And the honest truth is, yeah, sometimes I do. Sometimes I would prefer Nada be targeted or Werner be targeted instead of another really good Georgia playmaker. And we know that the Georgia roster is filled with potentially dynamic playmakers. We know that. But sometimes tight end is just a better choice. And obviously we all know that, you know, matchup's going to determine a lot of this kind of stuff. And, you know, looking for open men, blah, 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 blah. But in terms of just the overall design, the overall play call, sometimes it's just better to go to tight ends, especially as you get into the scoring situation. From the opponent's 40 in, scoring just becomes harder. Play calling just becomes harder as the field gets shorter because there's no deep threat to worry about, which means against an opponent like LSU, a perfect example of this. Grant Delpit may be the best, or among the very best safeties in the entire country. Devin White may very well be the best inside linebacker in the entire country. I want those guys thinking about things. I want them thinking about Isaac Nada getting behind them. I want them to think about, you know, in Delpit's case, Isaac Nada or Charlie Warner posting them up. I want them thinking about that. So the threat of the tight end is sometimes even more dangerous than a dynamic running back or a really good wide receiver. You know, a lot of Georgia fans have lamented the absence of Javon Wims and that back shoulder throw that he and Jake Fromm were so good at teaming up on a year ago. The reason why that's important for Georgia last year is when you get into the so-called red zone, it's just harder to score. You see Georgia's defense get better as it gets closer to the goal line because really good defenders are now covering a much smaller piece of grass. And that's why tight ends are valuable. If you don't have a tight end, you're not winning a national championship for the most part. In the even in this sort of vibrant spread age, it's the teams with tight ends that win national championships, and the threat of throwing to them, I think, opens up things for other spots there. All right, SEC through here, brought to you by our friends at MyBookie. Of course, you can check them out online by finding them, MyBookie. Check them out there. And you can use the promo code DOGNATION, get your first deposit match dollar for dollar. That means you're a winner before you even get your first bet down. Find them online, MyBookie. Use the promo code DOGNATION. You can get your first deposit match dollar for dollar. But you got to go right now. They're going to take this offer away here pretty soon, I understand. Its time is going to run out and expire here, so make sure you take advantage before it does. Online at MyBookie, the promo code DOGNATION. Get your first deposit match, and then you're after that, you're playing, you're winning, you're getting paid. It's really, really simple after that. And good luck at the place where the pros play, the place known for the fast, no-hassle payout when you win, my friends at MyBookie. All right, I want to show you, if you're watching here, a brief piece of video that an Alabama fan captured online here, and there has been a lot of reaction to this. So Tua Tagovailoa lined up at wide receiver on Saturday, and an Arkansas defensive back, and if you're not watching, I'll describe it to you. Arkansas defensive back, when the ball was snapped, went up and gave him some pretty strong hands there, above the shoulder, kind of underneath the chin strap, and Alabama fans have lost their mind on this. And this is one of those where I am so tired of hearing, you know, any kind of, I don't have any patience for any kind of Alabama whining on this whatsoever. You know, as they continue on down the field, the guy is still giving Tua a whole bunch of grief here, a lot of extracurricular stuff. Listen, football is not a cute sport. And, you know, Tua Tagovailoa throwing as many touchdowns as he is and having as much success as he is, that may seem like a cute story. But if you also try to get tricky and line him up at wide receiver, you can't expect an SEC defensive back not to take advantage of that as an opportunity and be physical with Tagovailoa. Especially with the ways that refs these days seem to want to protect quarterbacks. If a quarterback becomes a position other than quarterback, people are going to want to take advantage of that. And honestly, I think you've got to do something to dissuade Alabama from trying to get that cue with its offense. Football remains a physical game here, and I don't fault our Arkansas for wanting to be physical with Tua Tagovailoa, but probably not a huge surprise that Alabama fans are whining about it. Speaking of quarterbacks, South Carolina, potential quarterback controversy here? Maybe not. If Jake Bentley is healthy enough, he is going to return as Gamecocks quarterback this week, despite the fact that Michael Scarnecchia played and won the game against Missouri last week. It's funny how fortunes can change over the course of a season. In the offseason, you would have said Jake Bentley was one of the upper-shelf quarterbacks in the SEC. Now Gamecocks fans aren't even sure they want him to remain their quarterback for the rest of this season. It is amazing how things can change. By the way, speaking of fast changes here, I saw where Danny Sheridan, the famous longtime odds maker, was quoted by AL.com on the odds of Gus Malzahn staying in Auburn over the course of his 7-year extension here. Amazing that we're already talking about this. Although, given the drama cultivated by Auburn, maybe this is not that big of a surprise. Sheridan, I think, if I'm reading the quotes correctly, if I remember them correctly, said he only gives it even money that Malzahn makes another 2 years and certainly not all the way through the full 7-year extension here. So Malzahn, on the heels of signing a big contract extension last year, according to the 24/7 Sports report from this week, already kind of wearing thin on some of the Auburn players. Forget fans here. It's some of the own Auburn players who are not sure how they feel about Malzahn right now. What an ugly situation at Auburn. Then one more story to get to here for our SEC through. I saw where Gary Danielson, Saturday Down South had the story. I don't know where the Danielson quotes originally came from, but he was talking about Joe Burrow. And was kind of talking about how the one thing that's holding Burrow back right now is his lack of game experience. And that is true for a guy that transfers in from Ohio State, did not play a lot of football, you know, it becomes an opportunity for Georgia, doesn't it, right? I mean, it becomes that opportunity to show him some things on Saturday that he's not expecting. You know, we don't typically think of Georgia as a blitzing team, but against a quarterback that's not used to reading a whole lot of defenses, giving him some different looks, that could be to Mel Tucker and Georgia's advantage on Saturday. It'll be fun to watch that chess match between Tucker and Smart on the defensive side for Georgia and Steve Ensminger, the offensive coordinator for LSU. That should be pretty interesting, and we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, one of the things that I'm really proud to be able to do here over the next couple of days, it's all leading up to a big show we're going to do Friday afternoon at Manning Sports Bar there in New Orleans. It's our Dog Nation Invasion preview, looking ahead to the game on Saturday by looking back at some of the great moments in this series in the past. Two teams that haven't played a lot, but have played some very memorable games when they have gotten together. One of those was back in 1998. Now, you're going to be able to hear some of Larry Munson on this and see some of the great video because of our friends at the UGA Vault. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to UGAVault.com, and you can find out how you can download the UGA Vault app, because when you get into the app, all the great Munson moments, all the great TV moments from Georgia throughout the years, it's all collected for you right there at the UGA Vault. And they were good enough to allow us to show you some of this here today and be able to provide some of these great look backs on the Georgia moments. We'll do a lot of it this week leading up to our show on Friday, including Georgia going into Death Valley, winning in 1998. Do you remember Quincy Carter and the Dogs being able to do this? Let's take a walk back down memory lane right now, courtesy of our friends at the UGA Vault.
It had been 12 years since Georgia had beaten a top 10 team on the road, but that streak came to an end on October the 3rd, 1998, when the Bulldogs visited Baton Rouge to take on sixth-ranked LSU. The Dogs' offense wasted little time taking control of the game, taking the opening kickoff and marching for the game's first score. Freshman Quincy Carter tied a Georgia record by completing his first 15 passes, treating the ESPN national television audience to a showcase of his talents. He led an 80-yard march for a touchdown on the Dogs' second possession.
Carter, we try to run a trap. He fakes it. He's back scrambling. Carter's coming out to the right. He's going to throw to a receiver back complete on their 25 and out of bounds. That was Michael Greer. Carter takes it. Dumps a pass on a slant inside to Tony Small, who breaks a couple of tackles and fights to the 2-yard line. The LSU in an 8-man front. Toss sweep to Orlandis Gary. Got a block, cuts in, touchdown.
With the score tied at 14, Carter showed that he was as capable as a receiver as he is a quarterback.
Carter underneath, toss sweep to pass. Who throws a pass back wide open to Quincy Carter on the 40, the 35, the 30, the 25, the 20, and out of bounds around the 13.
That drive resulted in yet another Bulldog touchdown that gave Georgia a 21-14 lead. The score was tied at the half thanks to a miracle LSU touchdown, but Carter would help give the Dogs a lead they wouldn't relinquish midway through the third quarter.
LSU in a 4-3 snap. Back. Quincy got a block behind him, looking. Now he threw it a mile. A leaping catch, Tony Small. Touchdown in the back of the end zone. That's his fourth or fifth tonight. Outstanding catch.
Carter completed 28 of 35 passes for 354 yards and two touchdowns, while Champ Bailey would play 96 plays and finish with 195 yards of total offense. Bulldogs upset LSU 28-27. And that week would take the Tigers' place in the nation's top 10.
There, so great stuff there from the UGA Vault, which, by the way, is free to download if you go to UGAVault.com. More than 100,000 people have downloaded the app. And it's just a great way to look back on some of the great moments in all of Georgia history, but especially this week with Georgia and LSU. And don't forget, as we get ready to wrap up our program here today, that we're going to have more of this kind of stuff coming up on Friday when we are live at Manning's in New Orleans. In fact, let's talk about the Dog Nation Invasion here just for a moment. Going to be at Manning's on Friday, starting at 3 p.m. Central Time for our big Dog Nation Invasion preview special. Looking forward to being there for that. It's 519 Fulton Street in New Orleans. It's going to be an awesome time as we kind of what you saw there for the 1998 game. We're going to do a lot of that all day on Friday, including some great former Georgia player interviews we've had a chance to conduct this week as they look back on their own memories of Georgia LSU. That's all going down Friday, 3 p.m. Central Time there at Manning's in New Orleans. That's going to be awesome. And then on Saturday for our Dog Nation Invasion tailgate. Now, a lot of folks lucky enough to be coming with us. We'll be heading driving over to Baton Rouge and arriving there at 11 a.m. Central Time. If you're going to be in Baton Rouge, you want to come by and see us. It's 3838 Burbank Drive there in Baton Rouge for that. Cannot wait for Dog Nation Invasion this weekend. Also looking forward to the cocktail party. The Gatorator Countdown, 17 days from now, Georgia wins again. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily. And on video, we got some time for some comments here. We can dive into anything.